when he refuses to stand up for that which is right.
Yes.
A man dies when he refuses to stand up for justice.
Yes.
A man dies when he refuses to take a stand for that which is true.
Yes.
The great and often unsung civil rights hero, Bayard Rustin, once said, we need in every community a group of angelic troublemakers.
We are nonviolent because injury to one is injury to all.
In May 1897, a ship pulled into the harbor in Durban, a city in South Africa. Aboard the ship was a 27-year-old Indian lawyer named Mohandas Gandhi. The young man was an advocate for the rights of immigrant Indian laborers across South Africa, and he was not popular among the nation's white citizens. An angry mob on the docks awaited Gandhi's arrival. Gandhi's grandson, Arun Gandhi, explains.
What happened just by chance was that the ship on which the Gandhi family was traveling also carried several hundred indentured laborers.
The mob assumed that the Indian agitator was connected to the arriving immigrants.
So this mob thought that he's bringing all these people into South Africa to increase the population and overtake the white population.
Gandhi was advised to remain aboard for his own safety. He refused. He was attacked as soon as he disembarked. The mob hurled stones, eggs, and bricks at him. He was beaten and kicked. His turban was torn from his head. The crowd intended to lynch him. Gandhi was only spared when the wife of the local police superintendent happened to pass by. She bravely shielded him with her parasol and held off the mob until the bruised and bloody Gandhi was safely inside a nearby house. Gandhi was later asked why he got off the boat. He explained that he prayed for the courage to face the mob, not for his own safety.
Later on, the police were able to arrest some of the people in the mob, and they invited grandfather to come over and file charges against them so that they could be tried and convicted. And grandfather came to the police station, and he met with these people, and he told the police, he says, I don't want to charge them.
Gandhi offered his assailants only love and understanding.
I believe three of the four people who were arrested eventually became his followers and his friends for life.
In this episode of The Thread, we delve into the influential life of Mohandas Gandhi, the man who inspired millions in South Africa and India to challenge their oppressors and convert enemies into friends. You gotta be the change that you wanna see in the world, just like Gandhi. Be the change that you wanna see in the world, just like Gandhi. I'm Sean Braswell. This season on The Thread, we trace the origins of a powerful idea, nonviolent resistance. So far, we followed the Reverend Martin Luther King's journey to combat racial injustice in the United States. Then we heard about Bayard Rustin, King's tutor in nonviolence. Now we turn to the iconic figure behind Rustin and so many other social movements of the past century, Mohandas Gandhi. Before Rustin helped shape the direction of the U.S. civil rights movement, he journeyed to India in 1949, shortly after Gandhi's death. There, Rustin learned firsthand about his hero's nonviolent tactics from those who knew Gandhi best. Known as Mahatma, or the Great Soul, Gandhi was nothing short of a rebel genius. He took up the age-old doctrines of love and pacifism and turned them into tools of resistance. Gandhi, armed only with love, humility, and disobedience, brought the most powerful empire on earth to the bargaining table, and eventually to its knees. If you're joining us for the first time, we encourage you to go back and begin this season's interconnected journey with Episode 1. Gandhi was born in Western India in 1869. He was the fourth and last child of a politician and a devout Hindu woman. Here is Arun Gandhi again, talking about his famous grandfather.
He had all the weaknesses that teenagers have. He smoked cigarettes and he ate meat when his family was vegetarian, and he would lie to his parents.
He just was not a very promising kid in a lot of ways.
This is Kit Miller, the director of the M.K. Gandhi Institute for Nonviolence.
And I really love telling people that, because we have this idea that people like Gandhi are kind of come straight out of the egg in a certain way, and it's far from the truth in his situation especially.
Gandhi married his wife when they were both 13 years old. It was an arranged marriage. 3 years later, Gandhi's father unexpectedly died, and it was decided that the teenager should leave for Great Britain in order to earn a law degree and help support his family. Gandhi boarded a steamer bound for England 1 month before his 19th birthday.
So Gandhi went off to London. He arrived there wearing a white suit in the wintertime and looked like an idiot. And I think he felt like an idiot a lot in the first, especially weeks or months.
There is an early photograph of the young Gandhi, taken just after his arrival in London. He is almost unrecognizable to those who have only seen images of him as an older man. The young law student has no mustache or glasses. His thick black hair is parted on one side. At first in London, Gandhi was eager to fit in, to transform himself into a Victorian gentleman. He bought a top hat and an evening suit. He invested in French lessons.
So he thought that if he changed himself and became like the British, speak their language, dress like them, and, you know, become British in every sense except the color, that he would be accepted more readily. And he attempted to do that, but he found that even that didn't help.
Eventually, Gandhi began a different transformation in London. In addition to his legal studies, he read sacred Hindu and other religious texts. A British Bible salesman even persuaded Gandhi to read the Christian holy book. Gandhi later claimed that Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, including its admonition to love one's enemies, went straight to his heart. In many ways, Gandhi was a changed man when he returned to India to practice law in 1891. But he was a lousy lawyer.
He was so shy, didn't represent himself very well. He got one case in what was then called Bombay, and that didn't go very well. So there was a sense of, what am I going to do?
Gandhi was about to give up. Then he received an offer from South Africa to help resolve a legal dispute between two Indian businesses. He accepted the offer and decided he would try his luck in a new country. The 24-year-old Gandhi arrived in South Africa in 1893. It was not at all what the young lawyer was expecting.
I think he was shocked by the racial prejudice in South Africa. It was an order of magnitude worse than anything he had encountered in India or in England.
Gandhi boarded a train early on in his time in South Africa. He purchased a first-class ticket. But when a white passenger complained about the Indian's presence in the first-class compartment, two railway officials removed him from the train. Gandhi and his suitcases were tossed onto the platform at the next station. He spent the night in the station alone, far from home and freezing cold.
And that's where he suffered his first physical act of prejudice, when he was thrown off the train because of the color of his skin. And that humiliation really brought about the transformation in his life.
For me, that's one of the magic moments in Gandhi's life. Instead of becoming indignant simply on his own behalf, he made the moral leap sitting there that night to recognize that his situation was just one of a countless number of moments of prejudice and racism that was taking place, and he decided he wanted to do something about it.
But Gandhi also realized that he didn't have the capacity to seek justice violently.
So he wanted to find ways in which he could get justice without having to fight for it. And that's how the philosophy of nonviolence came about, and he began to practice that, and that became his mission in life.
Gandhi's commitment to justice and nonviolence led him to make an important decision. He decided to stay and help the Indian community fight for its rights. Instead of remaining in South Africa for 1 year to complete his legal assignment, Gandhi stayed for 21 years. At first, Gandhi was a loyal subject of the British Empire, and he worked to make change within the existing system. But he came to realize that those in power were not interested in changing the nation's laws or customs. Often they wanted to pass new ones. In 1906, the government in Transvaal, a province of South Africa, announced it would require all Indian men, women, and children to register or face imprisonment. Gandhi had an idea for how best to protest the new law.
the first expression of nonviolence in a political frame actually took place on September 11th, 1906. It's the other September 11th.
In the following clip from the 1982 film Gandhi, the young lawyer, played by Ben Kingsley, makes his case for nonviolence and non-cooperation on that day. Before a hall packed with Indian laborers, Gandhi proposed a new tactic.
Whatever they do to us, we will attack no one, kill no one, but we will not give our fingerprints, not one of us. They will imprison us, they will fine us, they will seize our possessions, but they cannot take away our self-respect if we do not give it to them.
Gandhi urged Indians not to register and to defy the new law, regardless of punishment. Rallies and protests were staged across the country in which demonstrators burned their registration cards.
I think he began to see that people who are moral had a duty to not obey unjust laws.
Gandhi was sentenced to 2 months in prison for his own refusal to register.
He began to move from being, again, like someone who really saw himself as a middle-class attorney to being someone who actually could best serve society by breaking the laws when they were not just.
And Gandhi's assault on unjust laws was just beginning. A few years later, mine workers in South Africa organized a strike against a new government tax. At first, the striking miners went ahead without Gandhi's help. Their protests turned into violent confrontations with government forces, and the strike went nowhere. Then, Gandhi decided to organize a march with over 2,000 demonstrators, one that took place over several days.
He didn't let anybody show any anger or frustration. It was very peaceful.
Gandhi was arrested and released on bail 3 times during the march. And then something incredible happened. The British official in South Africa, who previously used violence to stop the striking miners, asked Gandhi to come to the negotiating table.
And during that time, he confessed to grandfather. He said, I could deal with the strikers because there was so much anger and frustration there that I could justify a violent action. But he says, I don't know how to deal with you because you are so compassionate and considerate towards us. And that is the key to nonviolent action. We are not fighting an enemy. We are transforming a friend.
Gandhi's new friend agreed to rescind the tax and end some of the other discriminatory laws against Indians. But Gandhi was still learning about the power of his new nonviolent philosophy, and his application of it was often imperfect. For example, he largely turned a blind eye to the suffering and discrimination being inflicted on the black South African population, and some modern scholars accuse Gandhi of prejudice toward that community. Arun Gandhi disagrees. He says that his grandfather's nonviolent mission merely began with his attempt to help his fellow Indians.
So he felt that if it's difficult to convince my own people, how am I going to go and convince somebody else?
Gandhi learned in South Africa that nonviolence could be a powerful tool for social protest. But he knew that his homeland in India was also suffering under colonial rule. And to combat that long-standing injustice and pluck out the crown jewel of the British Empire, it would take a resistance movement unlike any the world had ever seen. India had been under British rule for almost half a century by the time Gandhi returned to his homeland in 1914. A population of over 300 million people was governed by a mere 2,000 British civil servants and around 60,000 soldiers. Arun Gandhi again.
His success in South Africa had attracted a lot of media attention in India, and many of the Indian leaders felt that he could make a tremendous contribution in India.
Gandhi joined India's National Congress, and like many, supported Great Britain in World War I in the hopes that the colonial power would treat India differently when the war was over. The British did the opposite.
There were some really harsh laws that had been passed during World War I, which the Indians hoped and expected would be eased up when the war ended. And on the contrary, harsher laws were put in place.
Among other things, the new laws criminalized civil disobedience and prohibited more than 10 Indians gathering in a public place at any one time.
But the people were so, motivated by this nonviolent action that in spite of that rule, more than 10,000 of them gathered in a ground, open ground in the middle of the city of Amritsar.
That open ground was a large 6-acre public garden with walls on all sides and only 5 entrances. When Colonel Reginald Dyer, the local British officer in charge, heard about the crowd gathered there, he decided to quash the protest. Dyer later testified, quote, "I had made up my mind. I would do all the men to death."
He brought his military and surrounded the crowd of 10,000 and opened fire on them point-blank range. And within minutes, he killed more than 386 people.
Gandhi responded to the blood and violence in Amritsar by encouraging Indians to boycott British goods, schools, jobs, courts, and honors, to refuse to pay their taxes. For months, Gandhi toured the countryside in the torrid summer heat, speaking to large crowds. He encouraged them to weave their own clothes and to avoid British apparel. The crowds piled up shirts, coats, pants, and other clothes, which Gandhi set afire. Gandhi's nonviolent army in India was taking shape, but British officials arrested Gandhi for preaching sedition in 1922. He was sentenced to 6 years in prison. Gandhi smiled as he was led away to jail. Gandhi served only 2 years of his sentence. During that time, and the remainder of the 1920s, the British succeeded in thwarting India's growing independence movement. They used a divide-and-rule policy. They exploited the existing tensions between Hindus and Muslims in India to consolidate their own power. Arun Gandhi.
So they exacerbated all of these divisions that existed in society and kept people fighting within themselves and not the British.
So Gandhi also devoted himself to helping his fellow Indians improve themselves. Kit Miller again.
His attention very naturally turned to, well, what kind of country will we be after they leave? And then also trying to get people to become able to be nonviolent. He many times called off campaigns if violence would break out, and he would fast himself in penance, using his own moral credibility with the Indian people to try to get them to stay nonviolent even when they were provoked.
British officials in India had no idea how to respond to the unorthodox tactics being used by the quiet man in sandals and a white loincloth.
They told new administrators when they were coming from England to India to stay away from Gandhi because he was so compelling. Gandhi will get you, they said.
Gandhi's impact on his own people was even more remarkable.
He was really regarded as a saint. I mean, he didn't ask for the honorific of Mahatma. He didn't actually like it because he felt that it separated him from other people. He lived, ate, dressed, and traveled like the poorest people in a very poor country. When he was asked why he always traveled third class, he smiled and said, because there's no fourth class.
Still, the man they referred to as Bapu, or father, had not delivered on any major reforms. That was about to change. Gandhi would demonstrate the power of nonviolence to the world as it had never been shown, a message that would resonate with Bayard Rustin, Martin Luther King, and others down the corridors of history to this day. Gandhi grew frustrated by the pace of progress in India. He knew he needed something that would break through, that would put more pressure on the British and force them to change course. And then he found it. The colonizers made Indians buy British salt at a high price, even though Indians could make it much cheaper themselves. Gandhi knew he had his pressure point. Arun Gandhi again.
He suddenly realized that this would be a great way of mobilizing the entire community, because salt is something that everybody, whether rich or poor or whatever, everybody needed salt. So he announced the launching of the Salt March and the defiance of the Salt Law.
Gandhi and 78 followers set out from a village in western India for a 241-mile march. They headed due south toward the sea.
The British were, they laughed it off. They didn't do anything to prepare for this kind of a major revolution that it became. And millions of people joined within a couple of days. That's when the British realized how popular this was. But by then, it was too late for them to do anything to stop it.
Gandhi and his followers walked for 24 days from village to village along winding dirt roads, the army growing in size at every stop. Soon the eyes of the world were transfixed on Gandhi and India.
And by the time they finished up, there were thousands of people walking along.
Kit Miller.
He was in his late 60s by then, and he could just eat up the ground walking. He was just on fire.
Gandhi and his followers finally reached the country's coast. In the early morning, Gandhi scooped up a handful of mud and salt left by the ocean in defiance of the British law. He declared, "With this salt, I am shaking the foundations of the British Empire."
People immediately after the first moment of when he grabbed the salt from the shore, people all over the country started to follow suit. And, it was a remarkable moment of people recognizing that they could be free.
That salt march and the defiance of the salt law was the last straw on the camel's back. And from that point onwards, independence was inevitable.
The following year, Gandhi traveled to England to argue for Indian independence.
Here he is at last, the mystery man of India. And he's carrying with him his pots and pans, which he declared at the customs. But when asked to speak into the Soundfill microphone, he said, "I think not."
Gandhi, now age 60, did agree to some interviews, though his words were few.
"If England does not grant your demands, what course of action will you follow then?"
"Of course, civil disobedience."
"Civil disobedience," Gandhi answered. But Britain's leaders did not grant Gandhi's demands, so he pressed on. This is Gandhi addressing a crowd in Geneva, Switzerland, after his trip to Great Britain.
"I regard myself as a soldier, though a soldier of peace."
The soldier of peace was greeted as a conquering hero when he returned back to India. And he was more convinced than ever that India could prevail over Britain using love and nonviolence. It was just a question of how long that would take. Up next, Gandhi's dream of independence for India was realized, but not without a steep price. Gandhi returned home to India in 1931. He is a hero, beloved, but India is still under British rule. Gandhi continued to lead his fellow Indians in acts of civil disobedience and nonviolent protests throughout the 1930s. It had only a modest effect. Britain responded with more violence and oppression. Then the Second World War intervened. Finally, in the years following the war, Great Britain's resolve started to fade. It came to the table. Arun Gandhi again.
"I think massive defiance in India against British rule, plus the tremendous losses that they suffered in World War II, really broke the back of the British and decided that, it's time that they gave India independence."
August the 15th, 1947, Independence Day for India. In London, the flags of the new Indian Union flutter over the headquarters of India and Pakistan. An era has ended, a new epoch begins.
The Indian subcontinent achieved its independence, but only after its land was divided along religious lines into Hindu-controlled India and Muslim-ruled Pakistan.
Gandhi was quite heartbroken with the way independence was finally brokered because of the divisiveness between Hindus and Muslims. He really went to the mat to try to avoid that division.
Gandhi feared that partition of the Indian subcontinent would spark widespread violence between Hindus and Muslims. He was right. The streets filled with corpses. Decades of nonviolent resistance were drowned in a river of blood. The possibility of death was a constant companion for Gandhi, but he continued on. Kit Miller again.
He wouldn't take the security. He just would continue in his daily habit. So a very easy target for assassination. Like, he knew he was putting himself at risk, but it was not his own safety was not his highest priority.
Gandhi was on his way to address a prayer meeting on the evening of January 30th, 1948, when a young Hindu nationalist fired 3 bullets into his chest at point-blank range. Gandhi died soon after.
You know, when someone was crediting him for being nonviolent, he said, well, my test of nonviolence will really be at the end of my life. Will I be able to, if I'm killed by someone, will I be able to die with my prayers for their well-being on my lips?
Close to 1 million people descended on New Delhi to pay homage to Gandhi and watch as his body was burned atop a large funeral pyre.
All this time, wherever he went, the Mahatma's doctrine of communal peace brought hope and faith to millions in village and city alike.
The news of it went all around the world. And you think about it, you know, Gandhi never had an army. He never had political office. He never had any money. I think he died with like 5 possessions, you know. So to think of someone who lived their life in the way that he did and had such enormous moral power, moral force, it changed the world. You know, the way he lived changed the world.
Martin Luther King once wrote of Gandhi, quote, "With a little love and understanding, goodwill, and a refusal to cooperate with an evil law, he was able to break the backbone of the British Empire. More than 390 million people achieved their freedom, and they achieved it nonviolently." Gandhi became a singular figure in the eyes of the world, but even the Mahatma stood on the shoulders of another great man. In fact, Gandhi's road to nonviolence originated with an eccentric novelist who lived more than 5,000 miles away. Gandhi's interest in nonviolence stemmed from a variety of people and places.
He spoke always about the women in his life as being key people showing him nonviolence.
Gandhi was also influenced by Hinduism, Buddhism, Jainism, and the teachings of Jesus. But the person who really caught Gandhi's attention was the famous Russian novelist, Leo Tolstoy. In the 1890s, Gandhi read The Kingdom of God is Within You, Tolstoy's treatise on love and nonviolence. Gandhi later wrote that Tolstoy's book, quote, overwhelmed me. Arun Gandhi again.
The idea of nonviolence began to mature in his mind. He realized that there is nothing disobedient about wanting justice. And so he came to know about Tolstoy and had read some of Tolstoy's book. And so he borrowed Tolstoy's term of passive resistance.
In 1908, 2 years before his death, the 80-year-old Tolstoy wrote an essay about the British occupation of India. He asked how millions of Indians could be enslaved by so few British, and he provided the answer. The Indians were enslaving themselves through their cooperation with evil. The solution, said Tolstoy, was love and non-cooperation. He advised the Indians, quote, do not resist the evildoer, and no one in the world will be able to enslave you. Tolstoy's words touched a nerve in the young Gandhi, who was attempting to help Indians overcome oppression in South Africa.
After he, accepted passive resistance, he wanted to learn a little bit more about it from Tolstoy, and so he started a correspondence with him, which went on for several years, back and forth.
In those letters, Gandhi shared with Tolstoy the details of his struggles with the British in South Africa and sought his advice. Tolstoy was thrilled to hear about the young activist who was trying to turn the principles of nonviolence into true political action. Just 2 months before Tolstoy's death, in one of the last letters he would ever write, he praised Gandhi's peaceful resistance in South Africa, calling it the most weighty practical proof that such a course of action could work. Leo Tolstoy is perhaps best known today for his novels, including War and Peace and Anna Karenina. But his biggest legacy and gift to the world might be his ideas on nonviolence. The young Gandhi embraced those ideas and altered the course of the 20th century. And, in turn, he inspired a black activist named Bayard Rustin, who then handed the gift down to a young preacher named Martin Luther King Jr. Next week on The Thread, Count Leo Tolstoy, the privileged Russian playboy who turned himself into one of the greatest novelists of all time before giving it all up to change the world. The Thread is produced by Libby Coleman, Robert Kulos, Sophia Perpetua, and me, Sean Braswell. Chris Hoff engineered our show. This episode features the song Be the Change by MC Yogi. To learn more about The Thread, visit aussie.com/thethread, all one word. And make sure to subscribe to The Thread on Apple Podcasts, follow us on iHeartRadio, or listen wherever you get your podcasts. Check us out at aussie.com or on Twitter and Facebook. If you love surprising, engaging stories from history, look no further than the flashback section of Aussie.com. That's OZY.com. Hindus, Christians, Buddhists, Jains, and Jews, all the many paths that lead into the light that shines bright inside of me and you. You gotta be the change that you wanna see in the world. Just like Gandhi, be the change that you wanna see.